Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Finn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Sky Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
One of the best MVPs and one ex-MVP. Mark and Rob together offer over 40 years Microsoft experience. Robert Crane. He's an Office Servers and Services MVP, the Director of CIA Ops for over 20 years, and a very sought-after presenter. Visit CIAOps.com. Mark Keane. He's an Azure TSP working at Microsoft, building constructive tension, the productive force that makes customers want to use Microsoft Azure. All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. And brought to you by Ingram Micro Cloud. Streamline the provisioning, billing, and management of your clients' popular cloud business applications, including Microsoft Azure, Office 365, Skykick, and more with the Ingram Micro Cloud Marketplace and Cloud Store. Get started now with Azure with the Ingram Micro Easy Azure program at www.ingrammicrocloud.com.au/Microsoft-Azure. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast. It's been a while, but Mark Keane is still with us. What's been happening, Mark?
So have you, Rob. You've been with us too. You're still with us too.
No, but much has happened in the world of Mark Keane since you've had the last episode, so we better bring everybody up to date with the latest happenings in the world of Mark. So what's been going on, Mark?
Well, we've been busy, Rob. So have you. We've been at a massive event. So there's been the event that happened last Monday at Microsoft for all internals and sellers, called the Solutions Tour. And then there was the Cloud Summit, which was split across 4 days. So there was 2 days of the partner conference, and then there was another 2 days of the tech summit. Rob, you were at the partner side of it on the Tuesday and Wednesday, and then I was there to join you on the Thursday and Friday, hosting the I was manning the Microsoft stand.
One of many stands that were there with the big truck, yes.
One of many Microsoft stands, yeah. And then we got to have a special shout-out to a whole bunch of people, Rob.
All right, you better shout out to them, because I'm sure they came to visit you on the stand and you owe them a favour, so name them by name.
Not only that, they also came in to help eat 2-metre pizzas on a Thursday night.
Excellent. Well, that's always good when the food is free. So, appreciate you joining along for that. And again, it's good to take advantage when people are in town at a Microsoft event. So, I think everybody said it was worthwhile. Lots of people there, obviously, at the tech event, 4,000 odd people. Not as many at the partner day, but
it was
the tech event. Tech event was a pretty big success. It was a 500 or 600 person waiting list, I believe. So, yes, very, very popular and well attended.
So let me see how good I am with names. Okay, so shout out to all these people: Adam, Nigel, Greg, Craig, Cameron, Kieran, Hilton, Tracy, Mia, Nathan, yourself, Rob, Shannon, Jason, Sonia, Amber, Ashley, and Tony. Those last lot were Sonia's family, but they're all there on the Thursday at the dinner. Plus, if I forgot your name, there's a whole bunch of others as well that came and said hello. But they were the main folk who came to the dinner on Thursday. And Rob, very, very generous of you to do that. That was a great night.
Excellent. It's almost as though someone had told you what the names were and you'd written them down in your OneNote. So obviously you were very skilled with the technology, which is great to
memory.
Great to see. Yeah, look, I forget nothing. That's for all. The CIA sees all. So I think we do have an interview to follow. So we want to get through some news. I know it has been a long time since our last episode for some strange reason. Somebody has been rather busy getting all fingerprinted and photo ID'd out and sitting at a new desk in a new location. So what's been happening in the world of Azure, Mark?
Lots and lots and lots of Azure news, and had an Azure Discovery Day. Azure Discovery Day that I was at today, we had a whole bunch of people at Microsoft. But in the world of news, Azure App Service and Functions on Azure Stack. So we're pleased to share that Azure App Service and Functions are now generally available on Azure Stack. This release brings the power of Azure App Service and Azure Functions on premises and offers product support for customers running in multiple or multi-node environments. You can learn more by the link I'll put on in my blog and in the show notes. Also, to Windows Server System State Backup to Azure. The general availability of Windows Server System State Backup to Azure means you can protect Windows File Servers, Active Directory, and Microsoft Internet Information Services, which is IIS for short, all hosted on Windows Server 2016, all the way back to Windows Server 2008 R2. Backing up your Windows Server System State to Azure gives you a very simple, secure, and cost-effective way to protect Windows servers. It also enables the recovery of dynamic OS and application configurations from Azure in the event of an IT disaster. More info of that in the show notes. New NVIDIA GPUs coming to Azure accelerate HPC and AI workloads. So machine learning, artificial intelligence, and HPC are changing the way every industry thinks, including retail, manufacturing, healthcare, oil and gas, and financial services. With that, Azure offers the most comprehensive set of GPUs in the public cloud, already offering VM sizes with NVIDIA's K80s, M60s, P40s, and P100s. Now there's even more good news. So Azure are launching a new VM size in Azure, the NCV3. This new size will offer new NVIDIA Tesla V100 GPU. The new NCV2 as well, offering NVIDIA's P100 and the ND series offering NVIDIA's P40s are exiting preview and will be GA for your production workload starting on December 1st. The NCV3 series virtual machines will use NVIDIA's Tesla's V100 GPUs, which are the latest GPUs from NVIDIA. The GPU sizes will also offer PCI configuration, PCIe, I should say, with direct support for Azure Premium Storage. The NCV3 series will be available in East US in weeks to come. Azure is the only cloud with dedicated InfiniBand interconnects to enable incredibly fast multi-VM computations. Just a couple of months ago, Microsoft released the preview of ND series, focusing on deep learning, AI training, and inference. The ND is powered with up to four NVIDIA Tesla P40 GPUs and provides a large GPU memory size of 24 gigabytes. Massive, enabling customers to deploy much larger neural net models. Also recently released was the NCV2 series, targeting traditional HPC workloads with up to four NVIDIA Tesla P100 GPUs and Azure's unique InfiniBand networking for low latency interconnect. The NCV2 offers great HPC performance at a great price for scale-out workloads. The NCV2 and ND will be GA and ready for production workloads on December 1 in multiple regions in the US, Europe, and Asia. Rob, what do you think
just
about
like,
that?
You're just like the Energizer Bunny, aren't you?
Let me just put some more batteries in. Shortly.
I'm just running a little bit flat. Wouldn't say that you're short of batteries, that's for sure. You've bolted out of the gate there and led the field.
Well, listen,
have you got anything left?
Yes, I've got plenty left. I'm going to put some more batteries in, as you suggested. I'll take a quick break and drink some water, and you can kick off with some Office 365 news.
You sure? Sure it wouldn't cramp your style there?
I'm perfectly sure.
You're perfectly sure. Excellent. All right. So in the world of Office 365, one of the new news items is that those lovely business applications that are part of Business Premium that weren't part of the Enterprise SKUs are now available for purchase in the Office 365 store. So you can actually go into the subscriptions and you can find the business apps there, and they're free. You add them to your subscription and you'll start to see those appear in your enterprise SKU. So we've got an article there that'll show you how to do that. At this stage down here in Australia, we will get the bookings app, and any of the others will shortly be added. So if you do want to see the apps that are part of the business premium, so that's things like bookings, invoicing, MileIQ, those sort of things that are coming to the business premium, you can now go and add those to your enterprise subscription. So that is really nice for those people, especially partners who have an E3. We've also now got the fact that Teams on Mac is supported by conditional access. So conditional access is, I suppose, an Azure function that allows you to control access to applications and information inside Office 365 by network, by IP address, and a number of different options. So I'll put, again, the link to that in the show notes. It's going to give you greater control over the ability to determine where your Mac users can connect to Teams, as well as a number of other applications. Now, for those of you who do worry about compliance and are concerned about that, Microsoft has released into preview its new Compliance Manager. So this will allow you to bring all those compliance dashboard items together in a single pane of glass. So Microsoft has been working very hard to improve the reporting, security, and compliance. It's beginning to roll a lot of the dashboards together. So not only will you see the controls, but you'll also see the usage in one single area. So again, have a look at the show notes when we give you the ability to do that, and you'll see that you can go in and sign up, or you can preview the new Compliance Manager. Now, again, we've had a number of additions to things like Sway. We've also had some additions to Planner, some updates for SharePoint, but it would be remiss of me if we didn't let the Energizer Bunny step in again. So over to you, Mr. Bunny.
All right, I stuck the batteries in. And a big shout out also to a friend of mine, Elliot, who joined me today at the Azure Discovery Day at Microsoft. And
how much do you get paid to mention people? Is there a commission structure in it?
Well, I now understand, being around, we've actually got listeners now. We actually do have listeners. Because I tell you what.
Is it me or you, or is it both of us?
We both have listeners. Hey, listen, I tell you what. I caught this guy, Elliot. He was, I know he listens because he got his phone out of his pocket. And when he unlocked it, guess what was on the screen? It was
you.
Our logo.
Excellent.
So, yeah, people actually do really listen.
So make sure that you slow down, talk slowly, and spread it all out so that we get the maximum listener value here.
Okay. Azure Functions Proxies. Azure Functions Proxies, soon to be in preview, will be a new capability that'll make things very, very easy and much easier to develop APIs by using Azure Functions. It's actually harder to do it slowly.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about. So keep the challenge up. Again, remember that most people will be listening to us at least at double speed, so you're going to come out at least 5.5 times, which may be a bit difficult for people to handle. So deep breath, just focus, just keep it nice and steady.
Functions proxy.
Doesn't take much to put him off his game, does it, ladies and gentlemen?
Okay,
you put the wrong batteries in, dude. Off you go. Change your batteries again.
Here we go. Functions proxies will let you define a single API service for multiple functions apps. You can specify endpoints on your function app that are implemented by another resource. You can use these proxies to break a large API into multiple functions apps in a microservice architecture while still presenting a single API service for clients. Other news, Azure Advisor, new dashboard, downloadable reports and configuration. So Azure Advisor is a personalized cloud service for Azure best practices that helps you optimize Azure resources for high availability, security, performance, and cost. Azure Advisor brings an all-new dashboard to help you more easily review the overall status of your recommendations across multiple subscriptions, downloadable reports. that's a bit of a tongue twister, that one.
So I think we just need to pause here and
customization.
Let Mark take a breath and then inform the ladies and gentlemen that it is dark outside. It is after hours, and Mark does have problems towards the end of the day. So please continue.
And customization options to tune Advisor to your needs. You can tag resource groups that you want to include in recommendations. For example, you can exclude non-production workloads and adjust the CPU utilization threshold for identifying low usage virtual machines for each subscription. More info of that in my blog and in the show notes.
One would almost suggest that you might have been partaking of some merriment before you started the show. Would that be correct?
What does that mean?
You've been drinking.
Not as much.
Alcoholic beverages.
No, I can't anymore.
Adult drinks.
I can't anymore. That's it during the week. It's done. It's finished.
Oh, I see. All right, well, go and take a breath and do a couple of push-ups and let me do some Office 365.
Hang on,
a bit of a break.
I got one more.
And then sure, one.
I've got two more, so I've got to do one now and I'll finish off with one more.
No, let's do the two and get it out of the way. We don't want to withhold any more energy, so off you go.
Preview the new Azure Storage SDK. By the way, Kieran said, you have to leave me alone.
I have to leave you alone.
That's what Kieran was saying.
Right.
Preview the new Azure Storage SDK for Go and Storage SDKs roadmap. So what's new? Layered SDK architecture, low-level and high-level APIs. There is one SDK package per service, REST API versions for greater flexibility. You can choose to use an older REST API version and avoid breaking your application. In addition, you can also load multiple packages side by side. Built-on code generated by AutoREST, split packages for blob, files, queues, services for reduced footprint, a new extensible middleware pipeline to mutable HTTP requests and responses, and also two progress notifications and where you can upload and download operations. So more info is that in the show notes.
Lots of parity errors happening here. Keep going.
Yeah. Okay, also too, here's one, the cheapest public cloud around. Azure. So with Azure Reserved Instances, Azure is now the most cost-effective cloud for Windows Server workloads. So this came through just the other week. So if you have Software Assurance, you can combine Azure Reserved Instances with hybrid benefits and save up to 82% compared to pay-as-you-go prices and up to 67% compared to AWS Reserved Instances for Windows VMs. After you buy a reserved VM instance, the reservation discount is automatically applied to the virtual machines, matching the attributes and the quantity of the reservations. So, with hybrid benefit, each two-processor license or each set of 16 core licenses are entitled to two instances of up to 8 cores or one instance of up to 16 cores. The Azure Hybrid Benefit for Standard Edition licenses can only be used once, either on-premises or in Azure. Data Center Edition benefits allow for simultaneous usage for both on-prem and in Azure as well. So difference between Azure and AWS reserved instances. With Azure, you can cancel at any time. With AWS, if you wanted to cancel, you would have to put your reserved instance onto the AWS market with whatever time is remaining, with the hope that somebody is going to buy it from you. In addition, with Azure Hybrid Benefit for SQL Server, customers with Software Assurance will be able to save even more. With Azure Reserved Instances and Hybrid Benefits, Azure is the most cost-effective public cloud to run your Windows Server workloads. So yeah, really the short answer there is Azure will not be beaten on price, pretty much.
Cool.
They've really gone to town on this.
Excellent. All right, all done?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. All right. So one of the things that has been released since our last podcast has been Microsoft 365 for Business. So there are two SKUs, a business and an enterprise version. The business version went live on the 1st of November, available worldwide. This is a combination of Office 365, Windows 10, and the EMS, Enterprise Mobility and Security. The Microsoft 365 Business Suite includes Windows 10 Professional and also some basic versions of EMS. So allows you to protect your machines and your devices easily and roll in all the great features of the Office 365 SKUs. So again, really easy, just add it to the users like any other SKU. Now, one of the other things that Mark may find of handy is that Word now allows you to work with LinkedIn to write your resume. So a very interesting little thing here that allows you to go and craft a world quality resume using LinkedIn. Sorry?
Why would I find that useful?
You've had your two items. Please wait till we finish and then we'll come back to you for the next burst of energy. So again, a cool little feature if you're out there needing to write resumes on a regular basis. Links connected into LinkedIn, so I can bring in information and it can show you how to format them. So again, have a look at that. The other one I'll bring to your attention and have a bit of a comment is that Microsoft Flow now integrates with OneDrive for Business. So you, everybody who has a SharePoint license has a OneDrive, which is aimed typically to keep store of their local or their personal documents. You can now integrate that with the automation engine that is Microsoft Flow. Now, I had a Microsoft Flow, or actually two Microsoft Flows go a bit rogue on me. They decided to start sending out constant emails to people who had registered to one of my webinars. So I woke up one morning to some very angry emails, and some people got 700 or 800 emails, and I saw them continually sending out. So
user error, PEBCAC.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. I think it was maybe because we were using, I was using the Typeform connector. Maybe they updated it, but a bit of a strange one. So I'll have to spend a little bit of time and work out how to overcome that or put in a tripwire then to prevent that happening again. But very interesting that the Flow did go rogue, and just because part of the process was obviously sending emails, it decided to loop into that for no reason. So had to delete the Flows, and that seemed to stop the outgoing emails, but didn't stop some of the anger out there. So for anybody who was affected by that, I do apologize, but it certainly happened without me knowing, and it wasn't designed to do that. I have no idea, even after following through with a service request, as to
surely it couldn't
what
be Microsoft.
Exactly. Well, I've got a feeling that it got caught in a loop, and my gut feeling is they may have updated the Typeform connector that takes information from the Typeform forms, and again, for some reason, it kicked off the Flow, and then it just looped and looped and looped. So, what I'm going to do is redesign or redo the whole Flow. And then probably look at using
Logic apps instead.
No, I use Microsoft Forms to take the input. So I don't think the issue was so much around Flow. I think it had to perhaps do with Typeform, but we'll wait and see. So I'm a little bit gun shy about doing it again. So I might do a little bit of manual stuff for a while until we can double test that, or maybe I put in something in exchange to somehow protect or prevent lots and lots of emails being sent out of the mailbox. That was a bit of a shock to wake up with.
So what Rob is talking about is he's delving into the world of serverless.
Well, I've been doing that for a long time. I mean, I was using Logic apps a long time ago. So, again, certainly recommend that people have a look at Flow. If you haven't, great way to do automation tasks. But, again, just be wary. This one, for some reason, went a little bit off the rails. Again, just keep an eye on it. I think it'd be nice to be able, perhaps, to put in some sort of break so that, you know, if it started to run for some reason, you could set a flag that would stop it running. Don't know how to exactly handle that, but hopefully it's just a one-off and these things won't happen again. So again, a bit of a strange one there. Don't know what exactly what happened, but anyway, all good now. So the last thing that I've got here is that the Outlook for Mac now supports sending to OneNote. So OneNote is my preferred application for memory dumps, and now the Outlook on the Mac has the button that allows you to send emails directly to OneNote, which puts it on parity with the Windows desktop application.
Lucky you finished that sentence. I thought you were going to say Outlook for Mac now supports sending emails, full stop.
Right. Okay, well, that's enough from me. Is that enough from you?
I'd like to thank Rode, our sponsor, and also the other sponsor, which is Ingram Micro Cloud.
Yes, they both provided excellent resources for us, and again, we appreciate the support. We also obviously appreciate the support of our listeners, many of whom came up and visited Mark and myself at the Microsoft Summit. Just pointing out, Mark, that it wasn't the Cloud Summit, it was the Microsoft Summit. So even though you do work for Microsoft, there was a slight error, and we don't want you to get in trouble.
Been a big week. You said it yourself late last week. You said you're all Microsoft out. And I didn't think it was possible to come out of your mouth, but because you yourself went to all of those conferences, plus the MVP thing that we went to, plus something else, plus the thing on the Saturday, and Saturday night, that was it. You had to, like, somebody like yourself.
Can you hear that beeping Microsoft in the background, Mark? I think that's, is that you backing up?
Ha ha. But it is possible, I guess, to be all Microsoft out.
It's pretty intense for everybody, I think, and also being on your feet. But it was, like I said, it was a good event and a bit of a different way for Microsoft to do it, to roll them all together, and that does make it, for somebody who does attend all the sessions there, it is quite intense. And again, it's a bit hard to, again, focus on trying to do work in between some sessions, but certainly worthwhile for me. I think a lot of people who went along as well. And for those that got to meet Mark and get his autograph, even more so. Hey, so that's fantastic.
Tell me the story you were saying about that guy that sat at the front row with his pillow.
All right. I think it's now time for us to end our introduction and throw over to our guest for this episode, Kirsty McGrath. I'm talking to Kirsty McGrath. Kirsty, welcome.
Hi. How are you, Rob?
Not too bad. As we always do on the Need to Know podcast, what we'll need to get from you is just an overview of who you are, what you do, and a bit about your business before we get started.
Sure. So it's Kirsty McGrath, and I'm the MD of OnPoint Solutions. I have a company that actually does full end-to-end adoption. So that starts from mapping a persona and scenarios analytics through to change management, comms, training, and sort of the wrap-up at the end and ongoing adoption. So that's what tends to be where I spend my space.
Excellent. All right. And you've also been recently awarded Microsoft MVP. How has that worked out for you recently?
Well, it was certainly a bit of a surprise. It was a good surprise, and really, you know, kudos to Microsoft for getting out there and looking now at change agents, and not as much on the technical side as a lot of really great people that are out there. In terms of change, look, we'll see what comes in time. I think that, you know, in an industry that tends to sometimes be a little tough, it's good to have that voice going out there and being able to support this as a particular program is great.
I think it's also interesting that Microsoft, again, is more focusing on the end user adoption, as you admitted. A lot of the Office 365 product is great, but I think if you look at the back end stats, most people are just using email, which is pretty much what they've always used, no matter whether it's on-prem or in the cloud. So having some more focus on the adoption side of it is so important, given the massive amount of services that are available for it. So I think that what we'll speak about and your focus is very relevant in today's market, because again, people probably have a lot of tools that they don't realize they have, and secondly, a lot of people probably aren't using them to the extent that they should be to really improve their productivity. I mean, is that a fair statement?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the past, it just used to be, well, who is using PowerPoint or Word, and there was no real stats or anything around it, whereas now, with the amount of reporting and all the back-end stuff that's going on, it's really highlighted and lifted, and well, just how many people are in and actually using it. So now it's really brought up to the forefront for not just Microsoft, but inside organisations to ensure that they're getting their return on their investment as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, one of the things that I suppose your inverted commas famous for, or that you've brought to the fore, basically is your wheel that shows all the services as segments of a pie chart, I suppose. Do you want to give people, the listeners who may not have seen that, a bit of an idea as to, you know, where that inspiration came from and sort of what it's meant to, you know, portray?
Sure. Originally what was happening was I was going into my personal Office 365 account when I was inside organizations to show them some of the breadth of the applications that you could get across Office 365. So I'd be logging into both environments, trying to show them a little bit of, right, because often what I will see is an organization will open up, you know, a couple of the tiles. So that look and feel, although it's, you know, the interface has changed, so they have a couple of apps. But it wouldn't be what is Office 365 or the breadth of it. So we're flipping between the two, and I started to create a graphic that was based on the tiles that you would see, so I wasn't going into my own personal account. And, you know, it looks different. I didn't want to confuse them. I was trying to put it all together. The tiles wasn't working. Eventually I kind of went, okay, if I put it maybe into a pie graph where it was segments so that I could actually open up or close down what they had and easily open it back out again. So I could go, this is the depth and the breadth, and it's so much more often than what they think. So it was an evolution over a period of time to try and get it to the point where it was a very easy visual graphic that whether it was a customer, a sort of that end user, or I was doing workshops or whatever I was being bought into, it gave me a much bigger idea. You kind of do it to scare some people. You're trying to do it to educate some people, and you're trying to do it to break it down for others, for example.
Yeah, I think that it is a very good representation of all the services, or many of the major services that are available in the suite. And I think that when it first started out, it was, you know, let's say probably a dozen, maybe 15 or 16 odd services. But obviously over time that has now grown, and that little pie chart has now become quite crowded, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's sitting at 26 now, which is a lot further than where we started. So, you know, what does it evolve to? Not too sure in terms of next instances, but I've updated that around about 12 times in the last year from where I originally started. And, I mean, you look at some of the updates that even sit within it, you know, sometimes is the explanation of what it is still the same as well, because of the evolution of it is certainly moving really quickly.
Yeah, and I like that you've added a segment now that says, and so much more, just to cover yourself when they keep adding.
Yeah, that's it. It is constantly changing. So it gives me that bit of buffer room whilst I create the next version.
All right. So just a question here is, as they're adding more and more services and it's growing, and we're getting that, different SKUs have different licenses in them, do you see that you're going to continue to maintain that one graphic and have, you know, smaller and smaller segments as more of the options are added by Microsoft? Or do you feel that maybe you'll break it out into different SKUs? Or so how are you going to, you know, handle the continued growth of the service to represent it in, you know, the simple way that you have?
That's one of the challenges. I had really focused on the fact that it was what I was doing with my customers and clients and my partners that I work with. The main focus that was actually out there in the industry was really on the E3 license. Dealing with a lot of enterprises, for example, was where my space actually had been heavily focused, and the audience that I had. And I haven't had a lot of call to be doing a lot of workshops and training at this point that sits in other services. So, for example, the E5 is starting to become a little bit more popular. However, the things that you've got in there is little pluses, which were extra services, sometimes maybe not a plus, but they all kind of still apply in some respects. So, yeah, maybe I will need to branch out and have one for an E5 one now with business premium, with it getting just so much more popular and the things that are being added in. And, you know, we'll do some workshops or training for some of the smaller organizations in that SMB market, depending on, you know, what you call it in terms of the small business market. So it's certainly something I've thought about and I have been asked to do, but I always still focus back on what does the end user need in front of them, because I get a lot of, you know, technical, can we put in Azure and can we put in other things around the outside of it? It's like, well, ultimately, it's really what comes down to who's the audience that's sitting in front of me and does it still apply to them?
Yeah, very much the case. And like you said, very much additional service, especially with the business premium, them adding bookings, them adding invoicing, MileIQ. Yeah. All these sort of things are coming in. So it would probably seem that you may have to create a number of graphics simply because you're going to run out of space here. And again, I suppose, as you mentioned, tailing it to that specific audience. Now, when you take this graphic and you present it to an audience, in what context are you presenting it to them? Is this the first slide that you show them, or initial slide when you do training, or is it used in some other way? You know, what sort of applications are you using this with for your, you know, the customers? And what sort of reaction do you get when they actually see something like this?
That's a funny one, yeah. Oh, look, I don't get to the wheel immediately. I actually usually have to start in the audience with just something simple of what is the cloud? Because I find that a lot of the audience don't even really get what it is. So it's not necessarily my first slide that I will jump to. I'd kind of gradually lead them in a little bit to get to that particular service sort of thing of, you know, what does it look like? So, if I throw it out to an audience of, you know, in your opinion, what's the cloud? I often get crickets back. And then I'll go, okay, tell me if you think you have an idea, raise your hand. If you don't and you think it's just the white fluffy things outside and you're not too sure, throw your hands up. Now, well over three quarters of the audience will think it's the white fluffy thing outside and I'll have no idea. So I'll kind of start from there and then give them an understanding of the safety and the security and the data warehouses and, I mean, really high level, simple things that it's the server room, for example, that you had on site, now all your software as well as hardware and all sorts of other things. So we kind of go there. Then what I do is, you know, what is Office 365 is my next question. And, you know, some will go, and I hear it all the time, is one of the reasons I did my blog in the first place was they just think it's Office. And then maybe it's Office in the cloud because I've just talked about the cloud. So it kind of leads them in a little bit more. I give them a bit of a lead in. And then I will go, does anyone have a version of Office 365 themselves? You can throw up your hand. And I'll be lucky if I might get one person in any given room. Like I've trained over 180,000 people, so I kind of hear it all. And I will go, okay, did you recently or within the last 2 years go into the likes of Harvey Norman or JB Hi-Fi and get a subscription where you pay every year or online to Microsoft, every year to Microsoft? And then I'll get a couple of hands go up. And I go, okay, and this is why they often will think it's just Office in the cloud. And with them just thinking it's Office and then in the cloud, they think of it as just PowerPoint, Word, Excel, and Outlook. Half of them don't even realize sometimes they might even have a OneDrive where they can put things into. So that's kind of where I start them from and just go and just make them think about what they've got at home to then go, it's different in an enterprise. When you're in an enterprise environment, this is what can come with Office 365. So then I bring the wheel up. And usually there's a lot of wow or gasps or oh my God. And it's like, it's okay, you're not going to be trained on this today. I want you to understand that it's so much bigger and to get curious. It's really about trying to get them to get curious around what's inside of it so that when they log in, because I'm going to take them and log them into their Office 365 environment, and they're going to see all this stuff. And I kind of go, okay, we can help if you want to ask a question around what something will be, we'll can discuss it. And then what I'll do is I'll take away literally all the things that they're not going to be using by covering it up as like a cover over the wheel and then focus on the core things that either the business has and then I cover it up again and go, and this is what we're training on. And it may be OneDrive, it may be Skype or something like that. So that I can kind of narrow their focus down to go, yes, it's big, but this is the core thing. It helps me to do that because at the end I'll often be asking for organizations for people like champs, people that want to, you know, jump in and get curious and learn and would you like to learn about all this great new technology that's, you know, coming along or the software or whatever it is we're talking about. And that kind of generates a little bit of interest for a lot of organizations. It's one of the sort of the leads to where I'm going or to help them break down in a workshop what their focus is going to be and go, then what's the next one and the next one? And let's not think about this as just one core topic. We need to think about it. It's all in kind of in context because these applications, that they're all quite interconnected. So often when they're thinking of just one thing like OneDrive, for example, there's so much more that's actually embedded in that. So it helps me to open out a lot of discussions with whoever it is, whether it's a user or whether it's a team building the solution.
So what are you typically brought in to achieve? Are you brought in by the management to show the users Office 365 or is it they've got Office 365 and they want to be more productive? You know, in general, what's the motivation for getting someone like yourself to come into an organization and talk to the end users about the product?
There has, you know, ultimately there's three core things that I'll focus on in my business. It'll be those that haven't got it at all, have no idea, and I'm trying to help them to wrap their head around what's actually coming down the line. There'll be those that have got something that we call like a workload that's been opened up. And it usually is the most popular one is, you know, Exchange. They've gone to Outlook online and to the Exchange. So it will be what else could you possibly do with this technology? Then there's the ones where, and as a part of that, it's often leading into scenarios and training. And the next one would be they've lit everything up. They've got it all there, but they haven't got anyone actually really using it. It's often a less than 10% of adoption if they've not done a program of work and a full adoption program of work to get people over the line because, as I said, they just kind of think it's Office. So there's three core things. I suppose I spend a lot of time at the moment especially in the very last one where they've rolled it out and in the past, there might have been just some seminars, or they think that people are quite tech savvy and they'll pick it up themselves. But if you don't show them a new way of working in this, you know, what we, you know, there's a buzzwords of the digital workforce. If you don't show people a new way and a new process, no, they're not going to just inherently jump in unless they've worked with it before. So I spend a lot of time in that space. I have organizations coming to me 6 months up to 2 years later going, how do we get people to actually, you know, utilize what they've got there? And it always comes down to education, education, education.
So, I mean, is that the reason that you see or that you believe that adoption of stuff beyond the email and Office 365 is so low?
Yeah, look, you know, when you think about changing the way that people work, inherently the way that we do things, we're not willing to change. Change is a very big component of this. We will always fall back to the default thing because as far as we're concerned, it's fast and it's efficient and it's something that you've done for, you know, 15 years or the last four and it works. So people aren't inherently going to start shifting for what they think works unless you give a really good compelling reason to take them to a new way of working. So even though the tools are there, sometimes they might even be told that, you know, now we're going to do it this way. If they don't understand the three core things, if they don't know why they should, and sometimes organizations are pretty good at, you know, articulating a why, if they've built a vision and it wasn't just purely around an IT rollout, they then got an understand based on new processes, what's actually in it for them, and then do some training to give them their aha moment. And the aha moment, that brain spike of problem solving, helps them to line up to a new way of working. So unless you do some real work around inherently shifting the way they work to make them more productive and efficient with some new tools, and human nature just says, no, I'll just stick to what I'm doing. Thanks very much. You can bring out the new technology, but I'm kind of going okay here. So you've got to help users based on some kind of a new process, if that is, you know, explains it well enough.
Okay. And how long do you see the adoption process, you know, typically taking? Obviously, we're talking about users, like I said, let's use the example that they have Office 365, maybe a few people have dabbled in a few of the other applications, but there's no consistent strategy there. You're brought in to help them adopt the technology. I mean, in your experience, sort of how long is this adoption process, will it take?
It goes forever because really there's new technology always coming out. But if you're talking about what they've currently got, often I'll go in and it will be a six-month process, but it takes around about 18 months. If you look at what's currently in there, there's a lot of products to get people over the line of. So it's not just also it's also the fact that they need to have messages reinforced again and again and again.
Okay, so obviously, again, the other side of it is with more products coming out, more training adoption is required for users to get the most out of that. I mean, the results that once the adoption starts, I mean, how can that be shown a tangible result? How can you go back to potentially the people that are employing you and say, look, you know, we've done this program and this has happened? What's the sort of the metric that you can point to let people know that, you know, adoption is on its way or it is, you know, basically working as expected?
Well, the one of the great things as we started out when we were talking at the very beginning is there's a lot of reporting now that's actually in that sort of back end. There's a Power BI adoption pack now that's about to have Teams included. And, you know, it's all there. But if they're not even started on the Office 365 journey, so that effectively there's no reporting, you've got to start somewhere. So when I talk to them about building a really good scenario around taking them from one place to another, for example, so depending on what it is. So if I use OneDrive, for example, it will be you've got all this information, it's sitting on local servers. People have their personal M or H drive as often, you know, their personal drives. And you want to move them to OneDrive. Have a look at how much server storage, for example, is being utilized there. And when they're moving over into the likes of OneDrive, you'll start to see the shift of the documentation and the size so that you get some metrics there from one to the next. So it will be based on the older slash sort of current technology and see the shift. If it's something like Skype for Business, for example. It will be how much are you spending on the likes of travel and room space, VCs, all these sorts of things. You know, where's the money going that supports that side of the technology? And if we start correctly using and we're working in a much more collaborative and communicative way with Skype for Business, you'll start to hopefully see then that real reduction in the likes of travel and how much the meeting rooms are actually being booked or problem solving or calls to help desk or, you know, there's all these different measurements. So you start them on the journey first of knowing what's the scenario, what's the problem? Because really, if you know what the problem is, it becomes then something you can measure. Storage space for all the paper, for example, and they've got a new way to go. And that could be even things like stationery because you're going to take them to OneNote and they're going to learn how to do a digital notebook. So they're no longer buying lots of books and pens and all these sorts of things. So if you know your scenario, you're then able to start measuring it from before and after. And you can also then use the reporting to gauge the lift of that particular technology. For example, how many people are sharing files if you're trying to get them to reduce down the amount of attachments in email. So there's lots of scenarios. So there's lots of things that I will help them with to go measure it before so you can measure it after. It gives you a really good indication of your return on your investment to do an adoption program.
So again, a lot of organizations typically focus on the cost side of or the cost saving side of the Office 365 implementation. So a lot of them think, oh, that once we implement Office 365, it's going to reduce our costs. We get rid of our servers. We don't have to pay as much for licensing, for example. I mean, is the ROI purely money based? I mean, what's the other, you know, I suppose less hard ROIs that we can apply for adoption to gauge that it has been successful?
Look, there's so much more, and that's actually an understatement. And I know that it gets rolled out as the IT project where just for moving Exchange on-premise to Exchange Online, for example, you know, there's a lot of return on your investment just to go down that licensing and not play with servers so much that gets, you know, deprecated in the office. There's brilliant stuff around, absolutely, just the pure financial returns. However, when we're talking about then the people side, and this is very much about a cultural shift. The IT piece is only around about 20%, really. It's 80% of it is people using it. So you're talking about some pretty big cultural shifts in the way that you work. If we're talking about that buzzword, the digital workforce, it's simple things. And I'll often be talking with users around, okay, it's a Friday afternoon, you're walking out the door, your boss gives you a call, and as you're walking out, he goes, "Where's that document? I really need that. I've got to work on it over the weekend." And in the past, you would literally do the hangdog look as you put your head down and trotted back to your desk and you fired up your PC or your laptop and waited till it go in and get an email and do your attachment. Or you'd say to him, "As soon as I get home," and then it's butting into that sort of family, you know, life when you get home, or "Can I give it to you Monday?" And then your boss is cranky because he wanted to try and work on it on the weekend. And then you're kind of stressing about it and because you can't VPN in when you're home. And so all these things lead to a level of anxiety or morale or all sorts of things. To be able to show people, and it's one of the first things I'll often show, is to be walking out the door, getting in the lift, opening up your OneDrive, and you could edit that document. Because the reason you didn't send it is because you saw that there wasn't a full stop and a capital letter, for example. You can just fix that in, say, the Word app if it was a Word document, and flick off a link as you're walking out the door. And before you've even hit the foyer, you're done. And you're out the lift and you're on your way home and you don't have to worry about it. And you know your boss has got what they needed. And just one of those basic scenarios of a core shift of being able to work, it's quite invaluable in terms of people's lives and the stresses and the pressures and how much work actually infringes on our personal life and also our work life. Little things like that can make such a difference to giving people the freedom. And when you look at all the share jobs now and being able to swap between people, and the fact that we need to become outcomes focused. The more outcomes focused we are, then it really wouldn't matter where you are, whether you're in the office or the internet was playing up in the office, so you went and sat in the cafe, whether you're in the cafe or you're sitting at the airport, to be able to do this kind of work on the go, because ultimately the premise of working across our Windows 10 and Office 365 and the Unified Communication Skype for Business. All of this is around that work anywhere, anytime, any device, and also anyone. So if we've got those four components, the kind of freedom it actually gives you and gives to the individual and the culture it can provide means a level of trust, and that trust inherently gives the user a level of satisfaction and a lot more interest in the organization. And for those that are coming in, to know that you get that kind of a culture, it actually attracts really good talent, and people will want to work for the organization as well. It makes a big difference in the culture. So, yeah, it's really important. It really shouldn't just be about IT.
Well, again, you mentioned that, and again, we've talked that the Office 365 implementation isn't typically a pure IT project. It's not typically just a money project or money-saving project. I mean, that obviously means that a big factor is around change management and things like training the users on, you know, what not only the product but what they can possibly do with it. I mean, you know, what sort of roles do
look,
you
often
see
undervalued,
those playing,
and
how important are things like change management
training? I do regularly get organised say, you know, our people are really important. We want to bring them on the change journey, but they're not putting the budget against it. So therefore, then they're not getting the users to use it. They're not shifting core processes. They're not getting their real return on their investment. They're not focusing on the culture of where they want to be, and they're not hitting the vision. And if 20% of it is about the IT, 80% is about the user, and if the users aren't using it and you didn't do an adoption or a change program, 80% is classed as failure. So you've now got IT teams that have actually failed their project, because really, you've got to get the users using it. So then when you look at something like an adoption program, change management is very heavy, heavy focus, and it's not just about the IT project. It's very much around HR and then what marketing and the comms team actually do, for example. And, you know, all these other core components within the organization all have to be engaged heavily. And it takes a good change manager coming in on the projects. It takes a good change analyst, and a business analyst as well can often be brought in to go, what are the core processes we need to maybe shift? What are the pain points? Because pain is money. And you're not going to get that unless you go down the road of looking at the change management. The good comms, people have got to know what's coming, and they've got to understand, and they've got to put it in context. Then you've got to get the training and get that aha moment. So you've got the why and the what's in it for them. So the why in terms of the change and what's in it for them, the better the analysis and the scenarios, and the training to get the aha moment. You can bring it all together. If you don't have those core components, then just like I keep getting is lots of phone calls going, why aren't our users using it? And I hear it again and again. And this has been an age-old problem, Robert. Really, it hasn't changed an awful lot. There's a million legacy systems that are out there that cost millions and millions of dollars, and there was two people in the organization that ended up using it. At what point are we going to learn that if we really want to change the way we work, something has to be invested? That's money and time.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing here. It's unfortunately, a lot of the traditional IT stuff is driven by IT or the finance. And I think even if you look back in history, you'll find that a lot of the systems aren't fully utilized as they were. And now users have got access to so much more, so that really to get that productivity, really achieve some great things, they need to obviously be given that initial step so that they aren't hesitant, that they actually go in and start using things like PowerPoint. They use Sway. They use everything that's available to them. The organization then allows them to focus and use things like Teams and collaborate and work together. And you're right, a lot of this is going to be driven from the business to be able to train the users and empower them. And unfortunately, a lot of businesses don't see the value in training staff. They seem to think that, okay, if we train staff, then they'll all up and leave. I think my experience has been the opposite.
Absolutely.
If you train staff, that then generally attracts
better
talent because they want to stay at a place
the
where they're training and their career
do.
Is developing.
Because the more that
so,
you invest,
I mean,
the more they love their
what
company.
I see.
The more they stay, the more loyalty you actually get. And training as a budget is often the very first thing that's cut. And that, I think, is always a rather sad, because really it's the very first thing that should be increased. Now I often also hear that we've got lots of things going on inside the organisation. This IT project is really low down. and I go, wow, this is a massive investment. And the problems that you've got currently going on, all those core problems can quite possibly be shifted and solved with the new technology. But if people don't know about it, they're never actually going to shift to a new way of working with the new technology. So how do you get that balance going where, and it takes someone coming in and doing those workshops or helping them to understand how they can shift some of the processes that are giving them some of the problems in the first place to be able to solve it. And I mean, I'm not just talking MySpace, I'm talking so many. You've got AI out there in terms of artificial intelligence, it's just some very cool stuff that can solve right across businesses that are way outside this. But bringing it back in again, where do they start their journey? Where are they going with it and how are they going to get to it? And if you can't define that at the beginning, then you know, why are you going down this road in the first place? Because if you're trying to get a digitized workforce, you need to teach people what that actually means in terms of a digitized workforce. It's just a word otherwise. It means nothing to people. And when it comes to IT projects, frankly, and to be brutally honest, users, and I don't like necessarily using the word users, but the end user that I'm in front of, they don't care. They do not care about IT putting out some new technology because as far as they're concerned, it is their job to do that. So all they're doing is forcing things onto them. And they go, well, who cares? Yes, they've got to do it. And frankly, now I've got something else changing. I'm not interested. I just need to get my work done. So you got to help them over that.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, obviously there's two sides of the coin here. A lot of it is driven by the organizations enabling the tools and the users getting the training and then and stepping up from there. But, you know, is this, in your experience, something that's done with a long-term vision, a long-term plan, or is it a bit of a stopgap measure? They bring people in and say, oh, people have been complaining and they want to know how to use this, this, and this. Is more organisations looking at this as a long-term vision and you know, what they're trying to achieve and enable the whole organisation?
Two questions really there, and that depends on where they are in the journey. If I'm coming in, it's because they have tried to, you know, contemplate a particular process and it didn't work. And what could we do to maybe educate to get them over the line because they didn't go down the right way. It was just a, here's a video and here's a guide, for example. And that is not inherently how a lot of users will learn because there's so many different ways that people will learn. So they've got to provide different ways for the user to get the information they need at the given time. So when I get called in for training, if it's the training side that I'm focused on, it can be, we've got new products, we want to do it. But often they're not thinking about it. They'll go, can you just come in and train on, and I'll keep down the road of OneDrive, for example, just train on OneDrive. And I go, well, I could, but why? And they don't think about that. They often don't have a vision. All they've done is think about, we need to get all the documentation off servers. We're paying for services in the cloud. People need to start using it. That is not an argument when it comes to bringing the user into the room. They're not going to do that. And they need some better messaging than you just need to get off. So that's where I would come in and try and help them understand their vision. And not a lot of organizations actually think about the vision, which I think is the biggest core issue. Because if they thought about the vision ultimately of where they were going, they would have the budgets, they would have the people lined up, the project team that doesn't just sit in IT. There's so many other core components, and it doesn't all sit with IT. I don't think necessarily it's the IT's responsibility. And frankly, when that IT project is done, it might take 6 months to a year. Who is the owner? It's a BAU, a business as usual.
Who should it actually be?
And it needs to start from a business as usual. And they need to be running alongside the IT project at the same time because you don't want this all to be dropped at the end and people left floundering.
Yeah, I think that in my experience is, you know, like I said, you showed them the wheel and there's a big shock on their face. They expected you to come in maybe just do SharePoint training or, like I said, OneDrive, and all of a sudden, you know, oh, we can solve this with Yammer, we can solve this with all these other tools that are available, and that's a bit of a shock to them. Then they need to step back and reevaluate and, again, get that bigger vision. So I think people are beginning to see that, but, again, generally what it is that, like I say, is that you need to see the overall picture first before I actually do anything specific, just so that you're aware that there are a lot of tools that trying to use that will prevent you from doubling up. So if you're trying to do a chat-based thing in SharePoint, probably not. You've got Teams and you've got Yammer. So lots and lots of options there. And I think that the vision thing's really good, but it's also really scary because all of a sudden people realize that, you know, what they've actually got is far greater and can achieve a lot more. And that can then bring up the specter of, you know, trying to eat the elephant. It's like, oh, this is so much bigger than we thought and so much more difficult. You know, how do we sort of handle it? You know, it's become a lot more complicated than we thought, simply by the matter that we now have all these options, which is obviously a big challenge for a lot of people.
It is a big challenge, and that's where it takes the company, not just one man or a woman or that IT project team or just the change manager. It actually takes a cross-section of the organization to really understand what the vision would be like. Because if you are just choosing SharePoint, you need to start from, and if you don't start from, what are the other things you could possibly be using? You then end up with all this shadow IT coming in, and people will find a way to do their job in their preferred way of doing it and the fastest way of doing it based on the knowledge of someone. And that may not be someone that sits inside the organization. They've asked their friend, because usually it's the trusted advisor that they will go, how do I do this? And they go, well, go and use, I know, maybe it's instead of OneDrive, go use Dropbox. So all of a sudden you've got all this documentation that sits outside of an organization where they've got no control. It's in a personal space and they don't even realize they had OneDrive because they were wanting to do something different that was on SharePoint, for example. You know, if we don't understand it, then we get shadow IT. So you go start from understanding what these core technologies do. Look at a process of how you can actually align the organization to this, then teach people on it so they know what tool are they going to use when. And then after they understand what tool they're going to use when, they can then pick and choose from it based on the work that they're doing as to what should sit within that range. Then if it's not meeting their needs, go back to IT or get further training, because there might be something else, because this technology is changing all the time. So it usually comes down to education. They've not been educated, and that starts from the IT projects, the organizational team, whoever's the steering committee or group, right down through to the teams and the users that are going to use it. Whenever I do a lot
so
of
is that what,
yep, you're on, sorry.
Yep. Go on. Keep going.
I was going to say, whenever I do a lot of the training, I say it needs to start from the senior leaders.
Okay, so
because they understand it.
Is that the one thing you'd recommend for organisations to get started with Office 365?
The senior leader piece?
Yeah. I mean, really, it's got to come from them. You know, they've got to get buy-in and sign off and commitment and all that sort of stuff.
Absolutely. Is that
probably the best place to start?
Yeah. Look, one of the core reasons I start with a senior leadership program is you're asking teams to be able to collaborate and communicate in a different way. It is not the general employee that's going to shift how a team actually works together in this new collaborative communicative way. It actually takes the manager or the senior leader or the CEOs and the setting the vision as to how they want the organization to move forward. I'm also seeing a lot of senior leaders falling very behind in technology because we're all so busy now. They're not willing to stop, and we're often not willing to stop and learn. They'll want a one-on-one for 1 hour, but it doesn't get them across all the technology. They haven't thought about their processes or how they want their team to work. So I say start from a senior leadership program in a top-down and then do team training and bring the teams in as a part of working and collaborating together to get the best outcome and what the vision is for that manager for his team, because he puts it in context for the work that they do. That is gold, because then they get what they're going to do with the technology, because it's all very well and good to teach on a feature, but if you can't align it to something you're doing as a work process, people aren't going to use it. So senior leaders and then top down and bottom up, it goes both ways.
Okay, all right. So as we're beginning to round off here, probably what we'll do is just get you to give us a bit of a summary on what we've covered, and probably if we could, if we can boil it all down to, you know, a single piece or a first step of advice when it comes to, you know, around the adoption of Office 365. So what's the simplest way for an organization to obviously get this process started, as well as, you know, giving us an idea of sort of a summary of what we have talked about in this episode?
Okay, so in terms of getting started, it really comes down to that very beginning piece if they're looking at going down this line or they've already got it. have the vision. After the vision, they've got to make sure that they've got a budget to actually support the vision. That's just vital. It's a component piece. They've got to have the resources to support that particular vision in the budget. So you go down that line. Got to have an amazing change champions network. And it's not about managers actually assigning people to be a change champion. A change champion has to be an enthusiast. You get a good change champion program going where they're rewarded and valued inside an organization. From there, you get a lot of help desk support. You get your team support. So you've got to build out these particular programs. So this is the process I will work through. And after your change champion program and working with the change manager and all the comms that need to go out to ensure people are ready and they understand what's coming down, then you do your training. And wrapped around all of that is what are the key success indicators to say that you're actually successful. So they're the sort of the core things that I will do. But ultimately, they've got to realize it's not just an IT project. That is just the first place to start. Start from there. Get the buy-in, get the right stakeholders, get an amazing ambassador that's a senior leader in there that can be the voice of a new way of working.
Yeah, some challenges there for a lot of traditional organisations, and that is probably where some of the hesitancy sits. And I think also, too, that there are certainly on the other side plenty of people who are willing to step up and do that, who want to get involved, who really want see this technology utilised throughout the organisation to enable them, which it's probably been a frustration for many people in the business for a long time. All right. So, again, we'll thank Kirsty for all her information and all her insight into the adoption side of Office 365. And probably the best idea now is if you can let us know how people can get in contact with you to obviously get more information. I'll make sure the link or the wheel does appear in the show notes so people can have a look at that. But, again, where's the best place for people to get in contact with you?
Look, you can either go to LinkedIn, Kirsty McGrath, it's one way. I've got my website, onpointsolutions.com.au, and it's got my blog and a few other things in there and my email address. Or my Twitter handle is Kirsty McGrath 13. I usually put out all of the, you know, what's coming out and keeping it up to date. And I run the local Office 365 Sydney business user group. If anyone wanted to join, it's through Meetup and they can come along and meet me in person. We've got a great community of change and comms and project managers and analysts and great people in the industry, a lot of MVPs that come along, and you can ask us some really good questions there as well.
So make sure that all those links are in the show notes for people for this episode, so that you can get in contact with Kirsty. And again, recommend the user groups are a great way to meet like people, to learn information, really keep up to date with this ever-changing environment that is now Office 365. But once again, I will take this opportunity to thank Kirsty for her time and her insight, and you'll catch us all on the next episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.